Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's like the first time we've done it.
Every episode is the first episode of Smell You Later. Just kidding. Welcome back to Smell You Later. We still have to find a new tagline, but...
We never had a tagline.
We've never had a tagline. That's it's your favorite podcast about...
Whatever you want it to be.
Whatever you want. About your two favorite people. Tynan and me.
We always get to fragrance at some point.
Yeah.
You know.
36 minutes in. Let's dive right in. I feel like I got a lot of my personal friends that I know in real life were like, oh, I really loved the episode last week.
Oh, really?
And I was like, you listened to this... I was literally just like, you listen to this podcast? Shit. I gotta watch what I say.
Yeah, I feel like this, to like, for my own sanity in many ways, I have said this to you off. Maybe I shouldn't put this on the mic, but like, I just have to like disconnect this show from my actual life. You know what I mean?
And
like,
same.
I'm obviously very intertwined, mm-hmm. but it's like, mm-hmm. no one that I know personally listens to this, which is a lie.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, for my own mental health.
Never quote me back to me.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for
There's
listening.
No ruder thing.
Whether you know us or not.
Yes. I feel like you messaged me the other day and you were like, is it just me or are you getting a lot of new fragrance? I feel like we've gotten a lot of new fragrance mailers this week. A lot of discovery kits that I'm like, this is a lot to discover.
Yeah, we do be discovering.
We stay discovering. I got my second steroid shot in my nose to smell.
I feel like this should be its own segment.
I know.
Like,
Sable's... I'm keeping people posted.
What is... Like, what would
on
we call
sinuses.
This?
My sinuses.
Yeah, Sable's sinus. The dispatch from Sable's sinuses. Yeah, so you got your second
shot. I think, like,
shot.
When I was in the throes of smell anxiety, I was just, like, Googling things about allergic rhinitis and chronic... sinusitis, which we just gotta stop putting itis at the end of everything.
Yeah. Like,
and there were a lot of Reddits and blogs and Instagrams of people who either had paranosmia or anosmia, and it was a lot of like, how to support someone who can't smell right now in those Instagram graphic text, yeah. graphic carousels,
the like ambient color,
yeah,
with
yeah,
the white
yeah.
type thing, yep. yeah.
And you just have to like slide through the carousel for tips, and I'm just like, we've come to this.
Well, I mean, like, you were depressed when you couldn't smell.
But even as someone who is currently dealing with it and like was suffering from it, I'm like, this is a bit much. This is a bit much. Do not make a Instagram carousel to pity me, please. The idea that I was like, oh shit, this is a fucking lifestyle for people. Mm. I was like, no, this will never be me.
Well, it's been you for the last
year. I know,
year
it has been me. And that's when I was finally like, I need to make an appointment with my ENT.
Yeah.
Figure this out. What's it for?
So is it better-ish?
It is better. And I don't know if it's better than before. I feel like the first shot was like it.
Really?
I don't know if I need three, but I think they do three just for the longevity of it. But my ENT was like, so have you noticed any difference? And I was like, I can smell colors. And he's like, oh, wow, really? Normally it's maybe like 50% better. And then part of me was like, wait, what if it could be better?
Get the third shot and find out.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to be smelling people's thoughts soon. And then it also made me realize, like, I went to the aquarium this week and I was like, oh, everything has every air in different rooms has a smell. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
Yep. Welcome back.
Yeah. And we were walking along the beach at Coney Island and I was like, ah, that New York City garbagey beach smell. Mm.
Yep. I love that.
I haven't been in the ocean yet this summer.
I've been by it. I think that's enough.
Yeah.
For me.
I've been by it. I've gotten near it, but I haven't gotten in it. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad.
I don't need to get in the ocean. There's nothing for
me
in there.
I want a little bit. I feel a little push-pull.
No.
A little tugging with your feet in the sand.
I just feel a push. Look what happened to the submersible. I don't need to be in there. But I want to be by. I always feel better when I'm by the water.
Yeah.
And I don't. I need one of those like Instagram moon girls to tell me why that is. But it's just nice.
There definitely is, because even when I was on Coney Island Beach, which is a health hazard, I was still like, wow, I feel instantly more relaxed with just the sea breeze and the smell of the salty air. Like, ah, there's something about this. Meanwhile, all this research and anecdotal experiences. I was like, yeah, duh.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Google is free.
Yes.
On Wednesday night, I got home and I had a lot to do, but I was just like, I got to go by the water for half an hour. And like, I was fine. Like,
go to like Transmitter Park?
Wrong. I don't know what that means.
The like kind of parky dock area in Greenpoint?
I'm going to say, yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't that though.
Okay.
So I live, I think, right at the me just telling people where right at the end of that, but then it starts again and by essentially the same thing.
Okay.
But that's attached to all the fucking new high-rise apartments.
Oh, yes.
I did that just because it...
Yeah.
That's what
it's,
I did.
But it's water.
It's water.
It is nice.
It is nice. Yeah. And then I just felt reset and went home and did all my work. It was great.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous for me to leave my house when I know I should be doing work because my brain will just completely shift. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, I did my errands and I went for a little walk and now I'm ready to work. And my brain's like, no, it's time to lay down. Like, no, I took you for a walk.
I feel like you only have like a certain amount of energy to expend on things per day.
What is that? Is that normal? I don't know.
I think I'm the abnormal one. That's just like go, go, go.
But you also, and I remember this when I also had a job, is that when you're in perpetual motion, it's like kinetic energy that just builds on itself. So it's just the momentum. Like you have the momentum from having a job and a routine. Mm-hmm. And because I don't have a job or a routine, that's fair. It's like every day having to crank the engine to be like, do the thing, do the little task you have to do today. My brain's like, okay, but I'm going to need a treat.
Right.
Several treats. And I'm like, fine, whatever you want. Just please answer these emails.
I love that. You are treat motivated.
I can either do an assignment or answer an email on any given day, but I cannot do both.
Answering emails is like not a lift.
I know. It's the emotional energy I have to be like... Okay, especially if it's like an email more than just a reply.
Yeah.
If I am the emailer, not the emailed.
I love emailing, just typing away.
It makes me wonder if like people just texted, if like they would definitely get a quicker response from me. Mm-mm.
No, you say that. So one of the people I work for, and it's just like my most consistent client. I've worked with her like full time before, so we're friends, but she'll text me about things so rarely, but this week something was like, we were very hot on a deadline, and so she was texting me and it was fine.
Yeah,
but I was like, girl, keep this with email. I gotta know where to find things, like, yeah, you know, keep it all in one place, especially if it's in writing.
Can't switch. Yeah, you have to stick to one.
Oh god.
But so once you choose your mode of communication, you have to stick to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my god, I feel like something is in retrograde.
Why?
I told you this earlier. My edits that I was so feverishly working on for my book were not received for the past 2 weeks. And I get an email like Friday morning that's like, hey, are we like what's the progress? Are we going to submit these? And I was like, I like looked back at my sent folder and I was like, I sent it the night before the deadline. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And it was sent. Everything was fine. And then I forwarded that same email and was like, hey, did you see this? And then they're like, oh no, I didn't. And I was like, wait, emails can fail? No,
they had to, it had,
that's what I was like, did you check your spam folder? Like, right, what the heck?
I don't like that at all.
I don't know,
if we something can't trust spooky. Email, we can't trust anything.
I'm like, of all the emails to not send,
you're fucking
really,
yeah,
really, Apple,
the mail? Edits you were stressed out about, yeah, all summer.
I know. And then they were like, oh, it's no worries, like, we have it now. And part of me was like, if it was no worries, then why was it such a strict deadline? Mm-hmm.
Right.
What the heck?
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Yeah. I had like all the blood like left my body for a second. It just like went cold.
Totally.
And I was
like, totally. Ugh. Well, they got them.
They got them. I'm like, okay, here they are. Hope you enjoy. Hope you enjoy. Still haven't hit the word count, but we'll see. Still a work in progress.
Well, speaking of word counts, I was working on something and I always ask for a word count just to have an idea, yeah, of what's expected. And they're like, oh, you know, they encourage me to like not worry about it. Yeah. Like if it goes long, whatever. They were like, like 1500, like 2000, mm-hmm, 6,000 words later. Oh my God. I'm like, here, oops.
But was this your trend piece?
Yeah. But I said, I was like, feel free to cut whatever. Yeah. Like, because it was one of those things I felt that would be like sections cut mm-hmm. instead of little line edits, which yeah. is fine. I'm like, yeah. I'm not precious with any of this, mm-hmm. please. I didn't even mean to go that long.
That is a feature.
Me being that unable is a to cover shut the fuck feature. Up. It is. I yeah. mean, it is a feature.
But. Oh, okay. I've been reading a lot of other people's like Substacks and mm-hmm. the internet mm-hmm. just to be like, how do other people write? Like, what is this? How does this work?
You should write, I told you this before, you should read Girls Can Kiss Now.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so good. Like, yeah. Jill Goodowitz's voice, uh-huh. I don't know how you say her last name. It's just perfect. Like, it's just so fun to read. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's all I can say about it. It's fantastic. I read Betty Gilpin's book. Do you know her?
That name sounds familiar.
She's an actress and comedian, which is like red flag number one. And I just like hated it. I just really? Hate that. It was like, it was written very conversationally, which is usually great. Yeah. Like, so is Jill's. But yeah. there was just something about it that I'm like, I don't think you have a handle on how you're doing this. And the stories were good. Like, yeah. her voice is good. But it was the way that she was like, I was like, you fucking need a comma somewhere or to take a breath. Like I would get yeah. lost in it and be like, I don't know what I'm reading. So I had to take a break from memoir, but I had Girls Can Kiss Now for a while and I finally picked it up and I'm just like, it's so good. And
I have like 70 books on my Kindle that I'm all in the middle of.
Yeah, right.
And that's like, that's why I love having a Kindle. You can have so many books in one and mm-hmm. it's light and you can put it in every bag.
Yeah.
And like, do I pick it up? No. But I...
Amazon sponsor us.
I know. Seriously.
What could go wrong?
I download so many Kindle samples. Just like, don't complete them.
But I can't wait to see the cover of your book.
I also can't wait to see it because I'm not sure what it will look like. But we shall see. Mostly now I had that like kind of... Mostly I was like, something's not working. It doesn't feel like it's hitting. And then I realized like why. And I'm like, oh, okay. This will require me probably defying a lot of my new editor's opinions. But I also think that it will hit more.
Wait, what did you just
I
say?
Have a different editor.
Sure.
Because my original editor who I sold the book to left to work at a different publishing house, which right. like fine, don't fall short of that. But she was so awesome and gave me such great guidance. So I was going in that trajectory. And then when I got a new editor and they read the manuscript, they gave me feedback. I think they think it's a different book than what it's meant to be. Mm. So the feedback they gave me was kind of like trying to pull it in a little bit of a different direction or fill in bits that I didn't really want to fill. Like just add things that I'm like, that's not what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then in trying to appease both, it just, the whole thing is just like, it just feels like very meh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Very weak and diluted. So now I'm just like, oh, okay. I feel like I'm literally just trying to hit a word count now, but none of it is really hitting for me.
Okay.
So I need to just like go back to the original blueprint and then flesh that out better.
Do you think that's feasible?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. But what about your editors? I mean, I really,
there's like a little bit of leeway just because I'm like, well, you kind of inherited this because right. your colleague left.
Right.
And I have a little bit of you're not my real mom-ism in there.
Sure.
So no, there's definitely, I definitely have the, I don't know about final say, but mm-hmm. it is my name on this work. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they would necessarily push back unless it was like, this won't sell at all.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's what every publishing house is ostensibly after.
Yeah.
But obviously it's like, I want it, don't worry, I obviously want to make this good because mm-hmm. That's my freaking name on the spine. So
right.
It's going to be really embarrassing if it sucks.
Yeah.
But
it's always so interesting to like, I don't know. I feel like I keep getting to 3/4 of the way through big pieces I'm working on.
Yeah.
And being like, what am I doing? This yeah. makes no sense. Who is this for? And I know exactly. that's just like, I know that's just my imposter syndrome. And I know that I'm really happy with everything I've written when it has gotten to the finish line and gone live. But mm-hmm. I'm just sort of like, why am I sharing my fucking thoughts? Like, I guess to that point, and I know that this scale is completely different because you are writing a major book, but I was working on something earlier this year that I am really happy with. And I really like the editor, but she did change some things, bits of it, ideas completely, because
ooh, yikes.
Because of advertisers and uh-huh. for people that are close to the company. Like, and I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I actually had a friend screenshot sent to me and was like, girl, what the fuck's this? And I didn't know what I was reading because I didn't write it.
Oh, fuck.
And then I realized what it was pulled from something that I did. And I was like, ooh, oh,
that's icky.
not what I wrote. Yeah. And that's like the antithesis of my argument. Like, what the fuck? And I get it. Like, I get it. I need an editor. I need to be edited. Whatever, whatever. I don't think
that's good editing, though.
But I'm like,
you can't change the intent of somebody's words.
And I was like, I would rather you just cut this out.
Yeah, just
like,
cut it.
Fine. Yeah. And then I fucking get an email from this publicist that was like, oh my God, loved your piece. And I was like, you wouldn't have liked the first draft. Yeah. Let me tell you that much. But you know what I mean? I was like, oh, it just feels nasty.
I don't know. I don't like that at all.
You know?
Also, or they can tell you that in the edit.
I would have, and they didn't. And I would have just dropped the entire thing completely and just been like, oh, we'll remove it. No big deal. Like, not, it was a much smaller part of a much bigger thing. But I'm like, now this whole thing doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, writing anything you give a shit about is inherently tough. Mm-hmm. One, just getting it there, and then giving it to someone else and be like, please run this, or, you know, and I like edits because, like, for a long time, Exo Jane, we didn't get any, which we needed, I needed, and I'm not too precious for anything. Like, I'm whatever. I'm happy to accommodate, but I'm like, if I'm writing about A and you're turning it into B, but putting it under an A circus tent, like, what are we doing?
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well,
yikes.
That won't happen with your book.
There's just like way more handholding with publishing.
Yeah.
Because they obviously want to make sure that the author knows what is going to print.
Yeah.
It's not like eventually they'll be like, okay, I'm going to edit and put it into print. It's like, no, no, no.
Right.
I like sign off on all that stuff. I just want to make sure that I make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Also, I feel like beauty in general is just so much more of a cultural focus. So the cultural interest is there now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if the entire beauty culture now is just like a hive mind of intrusive thoughts.
Wait, what? Go into that.
I feel like everyone's interest in beauty culture now, either in the service-y how-tos or the cultural, like, what does this mean? Or all of the different girls, like tomato girl, strawberry girl, all the girls, like hot girl walk, rat girl summer, like all these things. It's like the girlification of culture.
Yeah.
It's like on everyone's mind, not necessarily in good or bad faith, skeptical faith perhaps, but because of that, it gives me like a little bit of anxiety of the way that my book will be. Oh,
sure.
Or anything I work on is going to be like scrutinized.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not unique to writers, I suppose, or anyone who puts anything out there. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, please don't think this is an academic piece of work, because it's not.
Well, I think like it's probably, I see the anxiety there, but on the flip side, it's cool that your book is coming out at a time when beauty is top of mind for so many people. Yeah. And the thing of it is, and I've said this to you ad nauseum, but you know, Tomato Girl Summer aside, it's like, I feel like a lot of the, not even critique, because that's one thing, but like the critical thought in beauty is nowhere to be found. And I like,
yeah, also the critical thought in beauty is so contradictory. There is so much dissonance in it. People are looking for like the Jordan Peterson of beauty, where like they're like, tell us how to do this, tell us how to think about beauty, tell us how to think about how to approach beauty and how to incorporate it in our lives in a way that's like, I don't know, above board.
Or like, give us permission.
Yeah. You know, for the longest time, beauty was stigmatized, femininity is stigmatized, and it was seen as stupid or vapid. And like, even to this day, very smart people and very conscientious and empathetic people are still like, ooh, selfies, how cringe, or something like that. And part of me is like, do you ever interrogate like why you think that?
Exactly.
But nobody really does.
Yeah.
But then they're like, it's like what you were saying with the whole like, get the bag versus like selling out. It's like two of the same now, where everyone's like, ugh, selling out, how cringe, but also get that bag.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
The dissonance just like does not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gives me anxiety, is that the expectation is that like, this will tell me how to think about beauty. And I'm like, nothing.
Well, it's like no one wants to see their own double standard either. Yeah,
exactly.
Myself probably included.
Same. I haven't figured that out. I don't think anybody has. And I don't think it's up to one fucking person to tell anyone how to do that.
But the point of critical thinking is not to be right. It's to think about something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Your book is not the, you know, Bible. It's your perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that it's super hot that it's coming out at a time when beauty is so, like I said, top of mind. But I don't think people are thinking. And I think, I don't even think that's any writer's fault. I think it's who they are writing for and what is getting clicks and this and that.
Well, it was like that. I think it was like The Cut or New York Magazine. They had an article like, what's with all the Tomato Girl and the Hot Girl Walk and like all the girl makeup trends.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's so annoying. And then all the comments were like, makeup's supposed to be fun. Just let people have fun. It's not that serious. And then I was like, oh, wait, I agree with you too.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, I don't care about the Tomato Girl summer of it all. Like, it's annoying that we have a new one every week, but it is kind of an LOL.
Yeah.
And like, all of, like, if the girls are having fun, that's great. But it's also like, I want someone to ask that question. I don't need an answer. I just want you to think about it.
I feel like the pushback or the cringe of it all is everyone's like, what does this mean? This is why people feel pressured by beauty, is because of all these trends that like nobody can attain.
Yeah.
Or like these standards that are keep rising because and then nobody can attain them. And like the hotter people get, the uglier other people get who can't afford that. And that's kind of always the way it's been. But at the same time, I'm like, believe you me, we will not be thinking of Tomato Girls in a year's time.
But it's also,
or I guess, Buckle Fat or any of that shit.
Right. But yeah. I guess on the flip side, it's like, none of this has to mean anything.
Exactly.
And that's okay too.
I think, yeah, the concept of a virality or a trend is taken way too seriously. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, we are really overestimating our own interest, like threshold for interest, when our attention spans are so short.
So short. But I think it's also, like you said, beauty and vanity and femininity has always been stigmatized. So I feel like, and myself included, people are always looking for permission to fucking put on makeup and feel good about themselves, or like whatever the fuck it is. Mm-hmm. And I vacillate between thinking so hard about what I'm doing and why, and what everyone else is doing and why it matters, and why we're talking about Tomato Girls and why we're talking about brand founders and this and that, and not fucking think about it at all. Just being like, none of this means anything. I paint my nails pink because I like the color.
Yeah.
I put on makeup because I think I look cool. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. I'm not saying it. You know, it's like, so it's like, so what is the truth? And again, I don't want to see my own double standard, and here it is. I just think if people weren't looking for permission, like, one, judging others for how they're presenting, vain or not, and two, having questions about doing it themselves.
Yeah.
We'd all be a lot better off if we just like fucking minded our own business.
Exactly.
Did any of that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not convinced.
I still think that you have had the best beauty advice I've ever read, which is just mind your own business. The best beauty tip is to mind your own business. Honest to God.
I don't know.
We don't know.
And that's okay.
It is what it is, man. I mean, knowing things, not for me.
Not for me. I know too much.
I know too much.
And yet, nothing at all.
Anyway, this is a scent podcast. Tynan, what do you smell like today?
I don't know anymore. I smell like Cloud Pink by Ariana Grande.
You finally got it.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of DMs and texts I got about Cloud Pink, I'm like, yes. I know, but it's very sweet that people think of me when they think of Cloud. And yeah, I saw Cloud Pink was coming out, and I was like, well, if I don't get that, I will die. Yeah. And
I will surely perish.
Shout out to the PR for getting it to me.
Wait, are they still with?
Yeah.
Who were they with before?
Lead. They're still with Lead.
Okay, yeah.
I couldn't have made it more difficult for them because I'm an idiot, but they did get it to me. And long story short, it's great. I don't know. Wait. It's here.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
To me, that, I mean, I know it's dried down on you a bit, but I mostly just get Cloud.
So if you like Cloud, you will like this. And I'm happy because this is technically the first like flanker of Cloud, because there was Cloud, then Cloud Intense, which is...
I think Intense is still a flanker.
Yeah. But this is like something more than just more, you know? And this smells, but I'm happy that they kept it in the convention of Cloud and didn't just put some other shit in a bottle and sell it to me.
Yeah.
Or,
sometimes it's a totally different fragrance.
Completely.
And I'm like, why would you do this?
That
would
have hurt my feelings. Yeah. and you're right. This is not that different from the original. I think the difference is more so in the top notes.
Ooh, I feel like that's what a lot of flankers do.
Yeah.
Like the Daisy, that's like the convention of the Daisy flankers as well.
Yep. But this is, long story short, it's fruitier. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the fruits that they used, this fragrance feels, this sounds so stupid because it is literally called Cloud Pink, but the fragrance feels pinker to me because of the fruits added. The scent itself is a little juicier. I feel like the original Cloud is so airy and sweet and cotton candy and electricity, and this is that with a little bit of fruit sweetness to it.
Okay,
so the top is pink pineapple, which we stand a pineapple scent, dragon fruit and berries, and the middle is vanilla, accord, coconut water, in Blush and Brett. And the bass is Magenta Moss, Amber Woods, and Musk Praline. So a lot of pinkified notes.
What the heck is Magenta Moss?
It's marketing.
Does that exist?
It's marketing. Yeah. But yeah, the top here is what switches it up. Pink pineapple, dragon fruit, and berries. And I like that it's sort of something that's like bright and juicy, and the pineapple and dragon fruit, that's more of a mellow, soft, melony sweetness, mm-hmm. and then berries, which are pink. It's just, it's really nice. I really enjoy it. It's what I like.
Where do you rank it in the cloud world?
Oh, good question.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, cloud and cloud intense are so similar that they're sort of the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would say this is number two to cloud. Mm-hmm. And I do like cloud more, obviously, since it is number one. But it's some, what is it? Like something for the girls, something to get ready to, something fun for the summertime.
Wait, what is that from?
It's Sweetie.
Oh.
It's just really fun. Yeah. It's just another fruitier version of cloud, but without being like, oh, we just threw red berries in this and sent it out. It's nice. No.
Pink pineapple is an interesting note, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think the new Hawthorne uses pink.
Grilled pineapple.
Like a scorched, smoky pineapple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The new Hawthorne fragrance is called Canary Diamond.
Just such a good name.
Such a good name. Oh. Smoked pineapple is the feature. Mm-hmm. And it's like my new men, what's stopping you from smelling like this scent?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is like absolutely that. Like every time I smell, I'm like, yes, I know exactly who this is.
Listen, I'm a pineapple scent girly. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy that Cloud uses pineapple. Also, mm-hmm. the grilled pineapple note in Canary Diamond is delicious. And that whole scent is more sporty cologne than I expected, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
Usually I'd say that in a derogatory sense, but not this time.
Okay. Smoked pineapple, sea salt, petitgrain, vetiver. That tracks, but you're right. It is kind of like a sporty cologne, mm-hmm. but in an Italian Riviera way, not in like a mountain rush kind of way.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's like the vacation-y version of a sport cologne.
Yeah.
But it's so good.
It's really good. I like it.
Yeah. Oh, of course, our guy, Rodrigo Flores, who created it.
Hey.
God, he's so good.
Yes. Anyway, Sable, mm-hmm. what do you smell like today?
Speaking of girlies, I smell like the newest girl perfume from Mugler. I am wearing Mugler Alien Goddess Flora Supra. That's so many words. Flora Supra. Nope. Supra Floral. Supra Floral. There's so many words in this. It is a flanker of a flanker.
Alien Goddess Supra
Floral.
Floral.
It's like floral with an E, so I'm not sure if it's floral.
Like Supra? Like the Toyota?
Dude.
I got it. The Toyota Supra. That name is not pleasing.
This to me is, again, it's just like, what did I say before? You smell it and you're like, ah, a woman has been here.
Yeah, literally. It's also like, didn't they just do a flanker of Alien Goddess?
Yes. Like, intense.
Like in the spring?
Last year? Was that last year?
No shade, but like, who is asking for this many flankers of the same goddamn coconut scent?
Dude, this shit sells, man. Yeah, I think that's right.
I mean, it is pretty.
It's pretty.
But they all smell the exact same.
Kind of. This smells, and I remember I did like Alien Goddess Intense more than Alien Goddess because it wasn't so heavy on the sunscreen scent. It was a little bit more white floral. Like I got a lot more of the white florals than just like straight up sunscreen.
Yes.
But the super floral is obviously super floral. They're just like, we've pulled out the featured Mugler alien DNA of the what's the word they use? Jasmine grandiflora. They're making up words here. Anyway, they have this jasmine. It's just Jasmine Sumbach. It's just Jasmine Sumbach. Mm-hmm. But they're like, this is our basic, their bouquet of their like jasmine DNA of the original alien. And they like pulled that out to make it super floral. And it's billed as an amber floral.
Okay.
Which it is.
Sure.
It smells to me, again, like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful summer woman.
Yeah.
Wearing a white dress in a field of flowers. Yep. But
with like a coconut.
With a coconut. In the background. Yeah. Rolling, somewhere tropical.
Rolling by her.
Yeah.
It is really pretty.
It's really pretty. I think people who like white florals and YSL Libra will love this.
It's really sweet.
It's very sweet in a nectary way, not in like a fruity way.
Yeah, no, you're right. An ambery way.
Yeah, in an ambery way, but it's...
The bottle is so pretty. It's got this... It's still that fucking alien...
Ombre.
What do you call it?
Shape.
It's the alien bottle. It looks like an alien casket, mm-hmm. but it's got this metallic ombre overspray that's... And like rose gold that copper. Fades down into clear.
Yeah.
So you can see the juice. It's really, really pretty.
It's very pretty. I think it'll be a hit because like that, whatever that...
Will it be a hit? Or will it just be
whatever
another?
That makeup is of the amber floral, it's just like, it just seems to be the crowd pleaser now. And I think that's why all these big brands are putting them out. It's because they're like, this is what the people want.
If you are wearing this or any of the alien goddess scents, DM us and tell us why.
Alien goddess, I feel like, is for people who worship the sun, you know? It's like...
It is. I mean, they're all good. Yeah. I genuinely like that. It's like, these are all the same.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a flanker is. It's like, same but not.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just like, what is the memo that's like, guys, fragrance industry, we've got to start cranking out these amber florals. Like, what is that?
Meanwhile, I can't stop smelling it. So I guess, you know, who's
it
the
is pretty
now?
In
it
an
is pretty.
Addicting way. Yeah. And like, when I wear it, everyone's like, you smell amazing. And part of me's like, shut up.
No, I don't.
Shut up. But also don't shut up. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it grows on me.
Yeah.
It just, it doesn't, I feel a little, I get imposter syndrome when I wear it, but like in a nice way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does feel very, it's funny. I love looking at the Fragrantica notes on these big releases and just seeing what the Fragrantica heads say. And
oh, like the comments?
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of them are just like, this is nice, but nothing special. Or they're just like, I love this so much. So there's no... Yeah.
You won't catch me dead in a comment section.
Yeah.
Whatever
oh,
they're
no,
saying
no, no.
is not for me.
Commenting is a mental illness, I think.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, I don't know how to transition from that to this.
You literally joked at the beginning of this episode, 36 minutes in, let's get right to it. And now we're 36 minutes in and we're getting right to it.
Well,
if we're nothing if not consistent.
We keep our promises. I'm so, so stoked for the guest we have on today.
Yes.
She's been on our radar. Just like the brand has been on my radar since I started beauty writing. Because to me, Régime de Flore was like the coolest, like... It was like opening ceremony vibes. Cool, chic, luxurious, but like in a cool downtown edgy way.
Yeah.
And the scents are beautiful. I went to the launch party for Leather Petals mm-hmm. back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm on the list.
Meanwhile, I did not get invited.
Yeah, but you went to a different event of theirs, I feel.
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Maybe they just sent you samples.
They sent me samples before.
Okay, okay. Yeah. They hadn't done that for me before. But yeah, Leather Petals, I love that scent. And then I've just been thinking about the brand ever since. I'm always surprised when I have this idea of like, oh, they don't want to be on our podcast. Like they're too cool or something. Yeah. And then I just emailed the founder, Aaliyah Direct. And I was like, hey, do you want to be a guest? And she's like, sure. I was like, what?
What do you mean?
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. I thought I would have to convince you more, but like, great. So she's so cool. I feel like most people probably have... If you weren't familiar with Régime de Flore before, you probably heard of the Little Flowers fragrance that she made with Chloé Sevigné. So that's maybe one brand recognition point. But
yeah, if you don't know them by name, I would almost guarantee you probably know the bottle.
Yes.
They're stunning.
Yes. You've definitely seen the bottles before.
For sure.
If you know anything about anything. So yeah, let's just get to the
let's
interview.
Go.
Yeah.
My name is Aaliyah Raza, and I'm the founder of Régime de Flore. A niche luxury perfume brand started in 2014, based in New York, previously based in Paris and Los Angeles and New York. Not that it matters. I feel like these days, a lot of brands sell themselves as being like very kind of local to the place where they're from or where they're mm-hmm. founded. And mm-hmm. for me, that it doesn't, I don't know. At the time when I started the brand, I was traveling so much and I didn't really live in one place. So that never worked. Mm-hmm. People would always be like, where are you based? Or where's the brand based? And I'd be like, it's not. And that was, I think, hard for people sometimes. But now it's easier because now I can just say, well, my office is in New York. I live in New York. And here we are.
Aaliyah, we always start our episodes off by asking, what do you smell like today?
Right. Which I love. I like that question. I do actually, I was working this morning and so I smell like about a million different like drafts of a new perfume I'm working on. And it's kind of an interesting one because it's something I've never tried to do before. It's a particular kind of perfume. I don't know if I want to say exactly what it is, but it's like a note and like an accord, whatever you want to say, an ingredient that I've never focused on before. Ooh. So for me, it's been a little challenging, and I'm kind of getting to the place, I think, where I'm happy with it, but it's all over my arms. Like I sprayed like 13 or 14 different drafts from like my wrists all the way up to my shoulders. So it's a lot. Yeah, it's like a lot of, I've made entire perfumes before only having sprayed them on paper. And then once I wear them on skin, I'm really disappointed and have to go back to the beginning. Mm. So now that was like a lesson I learned early on is like, it's kind of easier if you just test everything on paper because it's less messy and you're not covered in perfume all the time, but it doesn't work because it doesn't smell the same on paper as it does on your skin.
Right.
So
that's totally true.
I'm gonna take a shower after we do this interview and wash all this up. Although I do smell good. Like I keep sniffing myself.
So. I love that. That's a good sign.
Yeah, it's a good sign.
Is it difficult to wear many drafts of the same idea all at once? I feel like that would be hard for me to like wrap my brain around.
I mean, it's nice because I don't have like 10 different totally clashing things on me at one time.
Sure.
But it's hard to tell the difference because some of the changes are really subtle. Like just, you know, bring up one element by 10% and then that's a whole new draft. Mm. And then I'm smelling them next to each other on my skin. So it's subtle. The differences are subtle. So, I mean, if somebody walked past me right now, they might think that I was just wearing one perfume.
I love that.
Do you do the modifications yourself or do you have a perfumer?
I work with perfumers. I work with laboratories. We do a handmade collection that I do myself for the most part. Mm-hmm. Some of the handmade perfumes I have actually done with labs, but we just use like their most crazy ingredients that they never get to use in like most commercial perfumes. And we up the concentration a ton. But for this particular perfume, I'm working with Roberté and they're doing the modifications for me. But we started off with a perfume that I'd made myself in my studio, which you guys will come to. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to them as a draft. And I said, this is 90% where I want this to be, but I need help getting it to be perfect.
Oh, I love that.
That's so cool.
That's really great.
Yeah. Wow. And they're great for that because they also, you know, like I have a lot of ingredients that I work with, but they have a lot more.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, and they're professionally trained noses and chemists. And I'm just like a self-taught experimental perfumer. So I can certainly create a perfume, but a lot of times I want to be able to change it in ways that I don't have the patience to work on for months and months. I just tell them what I want and then they do it.
What is it like to take a perfume sort of 90% of the way there and then hand it off and then get multiple drafts back?
I love it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not a control freak about it.
That's good. I am.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. There's something about, I'm trying to remember if I ever was a total control freak about the formula. I think for the first few years I was when I was making everything by hand. And after I'd made like, you know, a dozen or two, maybe two dozen different perfumes, I was like, there's just certain things that I smell in other perfumes or in vintage perfumes or wherever that I, or in life that I don't know how to capture. Mm. And so I love being able to ask for that and having it done and having that element added to the word. It's kind of like retouching. I can take like, I don't know, like I could take a bunch of selfies and look at them and they'd be fine or okay. But then I would maybe ask somebody to retouch them a little bit and I'd like them a lot better.
I like that.
That must be really interesting too for the perfumers to communicate with a smell brief since they have basically like your prototypes. Do you say something like, I like this, but like make it a little bit more softer or energetic?
Definitely. I say all kinds of things. Yeah. Like anything you can think of that you could possibly say to a perfumer or a lab, I've probably said before.
That's awesome.
So we were wondering, like, to sort of start off, like, a little bit about your background. I know that you said that you moved a lot while, you know, before making the brand and then while, you know, after launching it. But how did you make your perfumery from your background in, like, visual art?
Okay. I had never thought about becoming a perfumer for the first couple decades of my life. It didn't occur to me that that's something you could do with your life, but I did always love perfume. I loved wearing it. I loved buying it. I loved reading about it. I was always, even when I was really young, I was kind of like a perfume junkie, and I loved the smell of beauty products and face creams and shampoos. And I loved the smell of all the different trees and leaves and flowers in our backyard. I always was into smell, but it really never occurred to me that that was something I could do as a career. So whenever people would ask me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would just think, well, I want to be an artist, or I want to be a filmmaker, or I want to be a painter. Like, it was always something creative, but it was always visual. And so in my 20s, that's what I was doing. I was a visual artist, and I was working a lot with film and video. And I kind of loved the idea also of making my way into movie directing, feature film directing. And that was what brought me to LA. When I first went to LA, I was 25, and I like an intern on a independent film, feature film that was shooting there and stuff like that. But all through my whole life, I was really fixated on scent as well, just more as a hobby and not as a what I thought I was going to do with my life or how I was going to make a living. So once I started making video art work and figuring out what I wanted to say and what kind of themes I was dealing with in my work, I was thinking a lot about scent in my visual work. And I made this whole series of video pieces that were dealing with this scent that I had in my head, but I didn't know how to articulate it in words. And so I was trying to articulate it visually. And after a couple of years of working on these types of visual video pieces, I just thought, well, I'm thinking about scent all the time with my work, but I'm not actually making it. Maybe I should try to actually make one.
Yeah.
And so then I started researching, where is perfume made? Who makes it? What is it made out of? Can you make it yourself? Do you need 25 years of training? Do you need a whole laboratory? Or can you just mix stuff that smells good? And like, that's a perfume. And I don't know, just I had no idea, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So I, you know, with the internet, I educated myself, and I spent probably like almost a year just researching how fragrances are made and what they're made out of. And then I started to collect materials and ingredients and blending. And I started out with naturals, and then I moved on to synthetics. And eventually, after many, many, many months of tinkering, I'd come up with this fragrance that I thought was pretty close to the idea that I'd been working on with the videos. I don't know if any of this is making any sense to you.
No, I love it. Yeah. No, okay. It is.
So then there was this little gallery in LA. I was living in New York at the time, but I was in LA because this gallery had asked me to show some of my video work. And I said, yes, but I would love to show the work along with a scent that I'm also making that goes along with the videos. Ooh. And they were like, okay, cool. We've never shown anything, you know, olfactive before. And so I ended up doing that. I had a reason and like a deadline to really do it, to really create my first fragrance. And so I packed up all of these materials. I probably had like 100 different little tiny bottles of different things. And I, you know, packed them all up in bubble wrap and took them to LA. And I had this sublet, and I was just working on creating the scent for the show. And eventually I did it, and I made the fragrance. I had the show, and it wasn't a scent for people to wear. It was the scent that I filled up like these porcelain bowls with the liquid, and the scent just kind of wafted into the room. And I just enjoyed the process so much. And it was this whole new creative world and creative challenge, I guess, to create a scent instead of working with video or anything visual, you know, whether it's drawing or painting or film or video, it's all visual. And suddenly I was working with something that was totally non-visual. And that was super intriguing. So then I thought, I want to do more of this. And eventually I started doing more of it. And then that thing happened that always seems to happen when people are just doing something for themselves, which is that the people around you start to say like, oh, well, I want to wear that, you know, or like, I can I buy that from you? And I'm like, no, this is like part of my art practice. I made this as a scent for a gallery. Like, it's not meant to be worn, but people go, but I love it and I want to wear it. And then I started thinking to myself, like, well, maybe it would be fun to actually make a product and make something that other people can interact with and engage with in just a really intimate way. And I do love that about making perfume. I love that when I talk to people now, they get really excited when they find out what I do. And they're like, oh my God, I've worn one of your perfumes before and they feel so connected.
Mm.
And that's so cool. But that never used to happen when I was making videos.
It's so, yeah, it's so cool that I never thought about going from like video to fragrance, something very visual to something completely non-visual. It's not even like photo to video or vice versa.
Yeah.
No, it's like the two completely ends, opposite ends of the extreme. That's so neat.
It's true. It's not like going from cooking to perfumery.
Yeah, right.
That would make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
It must be so cool too to meet people. You tell them what you do and then they're like, oh, I've heard of Régime de Flore.
Yeah.
Like, I wear one of your scents. Like, that must be such an awesome
really
feeling.
Cool. Yeah. It is a good, it's a really good feeling. Yeah. I do. I love when that happens. It makes me really happy.
You said that you always loved fragrance growing up. Did you have any specific or particular fragrances that were like your North Star for the types of scents you wanted to create?
I definitely did. I always loved Rocco.
Mm.
That was, you know, my big favorite fragrance as like a teenager. And I remember, I think I had read about it in some magazine as like this, you know, vintage kind of, I don't want to say old lady, but it was being talked about in some article being a very kind of old fashioned perfume. And then when I finally smelled it, I loved it. I was like, it is kind of unlike anything I've ever smelled before. And it does have a very vintage smell to it, but I just fell in love with it. And a lot of the perfumes I wore both before and after that one were actually similar to it. Like a lot of them were gardenia, tuberose, very kind of intoxicating and heavy and kind of those night blooming white flowers.
Mm.
Yeah.
So those were kind of my benchmark, but not to say that that's what I wanted to create, but that was what I had kind of just known the most and loved and collected and worn and what people associated me with. And so when I started, I definitely was working with a lot of those materials, but then I was also really conscious of like wanting to make stuff that wasn't anything like that and that other people could enjoy. So it wasn't just for me.
Sure.
Right.
Now that you say that, I see a little bit of those references throughout your collection because I really like the way that you play with like florals and greens and things like that. But they're never, even though those aren't maybe the notes that I personally gravitate towards first, they never wear super heavily on me and they feel timeless, I think is what I'm trying to get at. They don't feel old school or vintage.
Oh, thank you.
They feel very timeless, but fresh in a way. I love that. I can see that.
Yeah, I think that is fun also for me to think about making contemporary versions of really old school, vintage, discontinued perfumes that nobody would ever make today, but kind of taking what I love about it and updating it and making it modern or contemporary.
Yeah. I feel like your bottles also reflect that same sort of sensibility because they feel a little vintage to me, but in a really good way. I think you have some of the coolest bottles in the business. Honestly.
Same. I love the orbs.
Thank you.
Yeah, the orbs are good.
Thank you. I love hearing that. Well, having come from being a visual artist and always being really focused on the way things look and just loving design and art and fashion and film and all of photography and all these visual mediums or media, it was definitely important to me to do something visual to, if I was going to have a fragrance brand, even though fragrance is sort of invisible, to make something really interesting visually. And I've definitely played around a lot over the years with what the packaging has looked like, probably too much. I think maybe I've confused people over the years, but I think, what we've settled on is definitely, you're right. It has a tiny bit of this. I like to say it's like, because I love all different sorts of design. I love, you know, brutalist architecture, but I also love Japanese minimalism. And I also love like French Rococo. And so I think if you look at the packaging and the bottle and just the whole kind of overall, the brand aesthetic, it's sort of a mixture of different things. And you can't really pinpoint, like, I like that it's very, the bottle is very simple, but then that shield is kind of the shield is sort of a reference to a more ornate time.
Mm-hmm.
I love how each bottle has its own different colored cap and then like a different typeface. Like, but they're all unified by being in the same shape bottle and having the shield emblem.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
It reminds me of the Beverly Hills Hotel. I don't know why, but like that's sort of.
Oh, I like that. When I lived in LA, that was a favorite place to go have an indulgent brunch.
Right.
Maybe I was somehow subconsciously influenced. I just always think of the pink and green wallpaper there when I think of it.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure.
Throughout your time making fragrance, were there any surprises or like unexpected occurrences when you were launching or in your first few years? Like, what has surprised you the most about creating your own brand?
Oh, this is funny because I think the most surprising thing in the beginning was how quickly it seemed to take off and how I suddenly, like, I went from, like I said, being an artist working with video to, you know, literally 12 months later, having a full-fledged brand that was in Bergdorf Goodman and on Net-a-Porter and all this stuff. Yeah, it happened really, really quickly. It was really quick. And that was the most shocking thing to me. But I have to say, it didn't last. You know what I mean? Like, what I realized in the years after that is that when you're new and you have a new idea or, you know, a good idea or whatever, people will be quick to embrace you and people will get excited, but it's more work. It's as much work as it is in the beginning, just to kind of get an idea off the ground and get it in front of people's faces. It's actually more work, like three times more work later on, once you're no longer new and no longer exciting, to keep their interest and to then turn that interest into actually a business, you know?
Yeah.
That's
so that there's been so much the first shock was how easy it felt to be like, oh, wow, like a year ago, I hadn't even thought about doing perfume. And now a year later, we're in Vogue. But then, you know, 2 years after that, it was a whole other shock of like, okay, wait, being in Vogue and being at Bergdorf's and all that stuff. It's amazing, but it doesn't really matter that much in terms of creating a lasting business. And it's really only it's just constant. It's just, it never stops. That's sort of shocking to me is there's never, I've been doing this now for 9 years and there's never, you know, every year we get a little bit bigger, we grow a little bit more and I get closer to having everything smell the way I want it to smell and look the way I want it to look. And it's all progressing really nicely, but it's sort of shocking when I take a step back to think that like, I've never once thought like, oh, I can rest now because I'm where I want to be. You know, I guess I'm just saying it was in the beginning, it was shocking how easy it was. And now it's shocking how hard it is.
No, totally. I think like that's a really refreshing perspective, honestly, because right now with so many brands starting and so many new products and businesses seemingly coming out of nowhere every day, I feel like a lot of people are not to be a hater, which I am so good at, but like, I feel like a lot of people are starting brands to be an entrepreneur or like the face of an entrepreneurship rather than like starting a brand for the sake of a successful, sustained brand. And you hear all of the wins, which are the Vogue spots and the new launches and going into retailers, but you don't hear any of the losses, which I'm not a business owner, but that is also part of the story. And we hear about all the launches, but we don't hear about any of the closings or the sunsettings, which are happening just as often right now as the brands. And so like, I feel like
so true.
Yeah. You know, we hear all of the wins, of course, because that's what we talk about, but
that's what people want to hear about.
Exactly. Exactly. But we don't hear how hard it is either. Yeah. So it's really interesting to hear that. Thank you for sharing that with us, because hardships and losses don't equal failures either. It's just part of it.
Yeah. You know? It's just part of it. It's totally part of it. And it's, you know, the cliche is kind of true where you really do have to love it and love what you're doing in order to have it work. Because if you don't love it, then you're not going to be able to work as hard as you need to work to actually make it work.
Definitely.
Totally.
Now that you mentioned like, that, I remember 2014 was about 2 years after I started beauty writing. And I've always been into fragrance. And I don't think media has really caught on to fragrance until like maybe just the last 3 years.
The pandemic,
But I remember reading so much about Régine de Flore. And it was like billed as like the coolest new, like very downtown chic New York brand. And to me, it was the epitome of luxurious, but cool, not luxurious and like stuffy.
Yes.
And then after a while, it was like, I wonder what happened to that brand. And then I realized like, it's always been there. It's just, there's just so much more stuff that launches all of the time. So there's so much noise.
Right.
More, so like, much in the beginning.
Yeah. Like that's like right when like beauty was booming.
Yeah.
It was booming. And yeah. And we were like, you know, it was very different from, I think a lot of the brands at that time had this very utilitarian apothecary lab laboratory look. And that's just not what I wanted to do. I wanted to do something, you know, a lot more expressive. And mm-hmm. it sort of coincided. Like, I remember our bottles were really, really colorful and ornate in the beginning and hand painted with the gold shield. And it was all about Europe and gardens. And it was kind of that world. And then a couple of years later, like Gucci relaunched. And
it was
also that same, you know, mm-hmm. mood. And it was just something that was in the air at the time. And so I think we kind of rode that wave of being part of that movement.
Mm.
And yeah, and now there's something else happening and we don't get the same amount of attention, but that's when it gets hard. And that's when you have to think about it as a business and not just something to get attention for, but something to actually connect with your customers and, you know, sell enough bottles to keep the lights on mm-hmm. and give people what they want and then make hard decisions, like discontinue the things that aren't selling and come out with new things that, you know, like the perfume I was talking about earlier, like it's not really a note that I was really ever particularly interested in, but so many people have asked for it that I forced myself to get into it. And now I'm really into it and I love it.
Oh, that's
cool.
I'm really curious to know what it's going to be when it comes out now.
We'll do another interview when it comes out.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing on your Instagram, like, a lot of the comments are like, bring back cacti, or like, bring back this one, or like, what happened to this one? Or there was a collection with like the colorful bottles.
Yes. And I am bringing back cacti and falling trees and glass blooms, because those have been gone for a couple of years. You know, one of the hard things, again, about business as opposed to just creating things is that I don't have the budget to keep everything in stock at all times. It's
Sure.
You know, in order to kind of stay competitive and stay on people's minds, you do need to come out with new things a couple of times a year at least. But in order to make new things, you have to pay to make the new things. And if you're paying to make the new things, you don't have as much money left over to remake the old things. And so people always kind of ask, like, why did you get rid of so-and-so? And I try to always explain, like, I write to people on Instagram all the time, like in the DMs or even emails, whatever. And I'm like, well, I didn't discontinue it. It's coming back, but like, I honestly just can't afford to make it right now. Yeah. And as soon as we have the budget, it'll be back. And then people are like, oh, okay, thank God. Because I think people assume that everything is like a calculated, shallow move. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or like not shallow, but like a calculated, cynical move to increase demand or just, you know, whatever. But it's actually just necessity a lot of the time.
Well, I think that we've talked a little bit about this before. I think that consumers think that every brand is Fenty Beauty. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's owned by Kendall with millions of dollars behind them. And you just can't judge every brand. It's like apples and oranges, you know? And I think
that's such a good point.
And like, why
I'm so glad you know that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's understandable that the consumer might not know that, like, this is Sable and I's day in and day out. Mm-hmm. But I mean, people don't realize that you got to make hard decisions. I talk like I'm a fucking business owner. I am not. But like,
but you get it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think we've talked with enough brand founders to understand that. And I think it's great that you can make this like really luxurious perception, but then in the mind of the consumer, that's also like, well, they sell expensive things. Like, they must be rich.
They sell expensive things and they work with expensive ingredients. So they must have like millions of dollars to work with on there. But it's actually so not the case. Yeah. I mean, I don't have it. The Régime des Fleurs is still 9 years in. It's still independent. Like, there's no backers. There's no investors.
Yeah.
It's just me. And I'm limited a lot by that.
Well, we hate investors. That's things go awry.
I've heard that a lot of times. I think if I went that route, it would only be if I really found one who I felt like I clicked with and trusted.
Angel investors only.
Yeah, right.
It's a whole new thing if you take like venture capital money and stuff. I mean,
totally.
I think it could be a totally different fun challenge, but it could also be a nightmare. I don't know.
Yeah,
never done it.
I mean, if you know anyone looking to give away millions of dollars, let us know, because we'll take some.
Totally.
So I feel like Régime des Fleurs has its own sort of mood and own energy that, I don't know, it to me, and I could be totally wrong hearing some of the things you've said, but it sort of gives me like Sofia Coppola, Virgin Suicides, and that's just my perception of it. But we're interested in knowing what was on the mood board when creating your world, both aesthetically, and I guess you answered olfactorily, but I would just like the aesthetics you were trying to build with Régime des Fleurs' universe.
Yes, I do think that it's a romantic universe.
Yes. And yes.
I think Sofia Coppola is so much about romance, and I love that about her films. The romance of the brand is important to me and just something that I gravitate towards. Like we were talking about before, I do like kind of minimalism, and I like things to be very simple sometimes, but at the same time, I like the intention behind it to be more Baroque. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Like, I have a ton of ideas. Like, people ask me, like, oh, why did you make this one perfume? And I think, like, well, I had, like, 25 different ideas that went into that one perfume. Mm-hmm. And I think that is kind of because I'm interested in a lot of different moods and a lot of different, like, the mood. You know what's on the mood board and what was always on the mood board? This is an easier answer. Sure. The mood board is filled with images of art, and like, contemporary art, art history, my friends who are artists, things I see in museums and galleries, things I've taken photos of on my phone, things I look up online. I have a ton of art books and photography books and drawings and paintings that I keep in my office or my apartment. And all that stuff usually tends to be what's on the quote unquote mood board. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the things that I was looking at and thinking about the most when kind of coming up with the world of the brand. Yeah, and then at the same time, though, I think it's, I wanted to pull the romance of nature into that. Mm. And so it's sort of like art and nature.
Yeah.
You can mix those two things.
Totally, totally.
It's almost like you could take any concept and just extract the romance from it or just look at it with that lens. For instance, I was looking at the website and the Himitsu scent, which is about like a very quiet, restrained, elegant aesthetic with like the tailored suit. But it still reads to me as romantic because it's almost, it's the way you look at it. It's not what it is on its face. And then there's like,
so right.
There's
it's
tears.
A romantic notion of look. It's Absolutely. A romantic way of looking at. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then tears is a lot more upfront about the emotionality of it, which I love the campaign images for that.
Tears is such a goddamn good name for a scent.
Thank you. I saw some other brands copy the campaign, not gonna lie, but that happened all the time.
See you in court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I think like, I mean, Sable and I, maybe just me, can extract the romance out of anything. You know what I mean?
But I feel that way too. I like,
you know,
that.
Well, but I think with romance, what am I trying to say? You are creating something, but the consumer is also bringing their own perspective to it. And I think for me specifically, your scent Rock River Melody is really funny because I grew up in Rockford, Illinois, and the Rock River runs right through it. And it's like a big part of the city. And I know that has nothing to do with it, but when I wear it, that's what it brings me back to, like growing up.
I love that. Like, I didn't know about that. I love that.
So, I mean, means something completely different to me than it does to you, but like there is a lot of romance and nostalgia to me that I am projecting onto it. And I think that is what's so cool about like perfume and art in general.
Yeah.
I think that's such a good point. It makes me think of like when I listen to a song that's really meaningful to me or just that I love a lot or that reminds me of a certain time, like what I'm getting from that song is probably has nothing whatsoever to do with what the artist who made the song was doing when they wrote the song or recorded the song, or, you know, it's just completely different, but it can still be so moving.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you've done some really, really cool collaborations. Mm-hmm. I feel like throughout there, I saw Bathsheba, Bunny Rogers, Kite.
Yeah.
And like Chloe Sevigny, obviously everybody knows who that is.
Great.
And like, right. The Little Flowers fragrance, but how do you find people to pair up with? I mean, I'm sure there are many people knocking down your door to create a fragrance with you, but how do you choose or like, who would you love to collaborate with?
Well, how I've chosen in the past, again, kind of not just out of necessity, but kind of what I like to do, but also out of necessity because of not having lots of money is to work with my friends.
Sure.
So I think almost everybody that I've collaborated with has been someone that I either knew for a long time and we had talked about working together before, but it had never happened. And then we decided it was time to do it, or somebody that was, you know, introduced to me by a close friend who said, you know, I've always thought you two would get along. You guys should do something together. I think I've lived in New York for so long, for so many years. And, you know, I spent years in LA and I spent time in Paris and New York, and you meet so many interesting people. And just over the decades, like, there's been so many people I've met or become friends with who I who I knew that one day I wanted to work with. And so I think most of the collaborations were just people like that. And then in terms of who would I... Yeah.
I love when it's just like a big friend community thing.
Right, in organic.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense because if you do something creative for a living, whether it's whatever you do, whether you're making art or whether you're making movies or whether you're making perfume, like you tend to surround yourself with other creative people and you all talk about what you're doing and it's natural. And again, either I could open up a magazine and point to somebody and say like, oh, I want to work with that person. But then you would need a lot of money to offer them. And that's never been the case. So it's kind of necessity. Like when the logo of the brand, for instance, was designed by a childhood friend of mine who I'm still very close with. And the bottle that we use was designed by an architect who happens to be my cousin. And so it's kind of like, it's just out of necessity, both necessity, but also desire to work with people I respect and love and already know. It's just, it's both.
That's so great because I feel like when you work with people who you know and whose work you respect, it's almost like the brand becomes like a manifestation of like your community, which is really cool.
That's such a good way to put it.
It is. And I think it, and I think the only, you know, one of the only reasons that we're still here and that we've survived being independent for so long is because there's that feeling about it. And you know, when like whether you look at the Instagram or you come to an event or whatever it is, like you know that it's, it all comes from me and like the people around me. And I think people can tell if something is genuine or not. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, you know, a lot of times when something's not genuine, it can still be a huge success business-wise, but it doesn't have that same feeling around it.
I feel like New York City is always the litmus test for authenticity.
You kind of have to, in order to survive here, you can't fake it. You have to really be doing something real.
Yeah.
I will say that somebody that I have wanted to collaborate with for years, for like, I think it's like been 5 years now, who I actually had a really nice meeting with a couple years ago. And I was so like thinking like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And he wasn't a friend and I didn't know him through friends, but somehow he was nice enough to take my meeting. Was Tyler, the Creator.
Oh, cool.
And so cool.
I really wanted to make a perfume with him. And I had heard that he, wore Régime des Fleurs scents. He had found them at Dover Street Market in LA. And somebody had sent me a photo of like his car in his cup holder. He had a Régime perfume.
That's so cool.
And I was like, it was so cool. And I was like, I have to reach out to him because I love him. And and we ended up having this long meeting and we spent like the day at his manager's office and we just smelled like a bunch of different things and talked and talked and talked. And it was so fun. And I was like, I left the meeting and I was like, yeah, like my next collaboration, Tyler, the Creator. And then he went off and did a perfume by himself.
Right.
Without me.
Feels like your perspective and his perspective. I can see
the overlap.
Yeah. The overlap.
Oh, because... yes. There was a lot of overlap. Yeah. We had so much to talk about.
That's so
like
cool.
We were talking about like flavors and mint and maple syrup and all these, like all these different, like, he totally got it. Like he totally understood.
I love that.
Where, like, because when I'm making a perfume or thinking about a perfume, I'm not just thinking about perfume. I'm thinking about foods I've tasted or drinks I've tasted or shampoos that I've smelled or, you know, there's so many different references and influences that are olfactive. And, and he totally got that. Like he lives in that same world, I think.
Oh, it's so cool. That
Now that I'm like thinking about the aesthetic of his brand, like, yes, I see. I see the overlaps.
Right. And it's good to hear that people doing that sort of thing. I mean, we as in the industry talks a lot of shit about, you know, celebrity perfumes, but I do feel like there are people who are celebrities doing cool things if their perspective, if they do really love it. It's like, if I was famous, I'd want to do a perfume too.
Yeah, I think like you can really tell like who's been approached by an incubator and like who has like organically done this.
Right.
And who's wanted to do it because they love it.
Yeah. Totally.
Totally agree.
This has been such a great conversation, honestly. It's good to connect and learn so much more about a brand that's been on our radar for the majority of our whole career.
Honestly,
you know?
Like every time I stop into that store Motion in Williamsburg, they always used to carry your fragrances. I don't know if they still do. They might have just like really focused on jewelry now, but I would always smell them and be like, this is it.
Yeah, right.
I love that. I'm working on, even though like from the business perspective, everybody always says like focus on direct, focus on your website, like that's the best margin, blah, blah, blah. I am trying to work on getting some more New York retailers. So I love that. I, people always write and say, where can I smell everything? And I'm like, well, you can make an appointment and come to my office. But but that's hard. I mean, I want people to just be walking down the street and see a store and go in and be able to smell the perfume. So I think I need to work on that more.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, it was really great to talk to you guys too. Thanks for asking me to do that.
Oh my God, of course. I'm so happy that we got to have her on, because you're right. I feel like she was such, has been such a mainstay in the industry since we started.
Yeah, so I feel like she is the New York Mag definition of an it girl in the sense that she's very cool and you have a sense of what she does, but like she's just not constantly like self promoting or I guess like in her age of just like constant posting and self performance. It's refreshing to see a person who's just like doing their thing.
Who's doing it, not girl bossing it.
Exactly. No shade. Yes. Which is like, I don't know. It's cool. It just reminds me too of like, oh yeah, you can be creative and not have to constantly think about how it's looking on socials or how you're going to market shit. I don't know. Right.
Yeah. Hearing a lot about her process is really cool. I feel like that was one of the, I mean, every, what am I trying to say? No story is the same.
Yeah.
But that one I feel like was more unique or...
Yeah.
Just, I was surprised by her, her process.
Also, again, like in my head, I was like, this is such a luxury.
Yeah.
All of the details of the products are exquisite, from the scent, but the packaging and the design. And then to think that it's like maybe just like a handful of people in like a little office in New York City is like, damn.
She also has such a good voice.
She does.
She should have a podcast.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I am really excited to smell more Régime de Flore fragrances. Maybe I'll take a little walk to Motion.
Ooh.
Just a little stroll, just to like see what they got and smell it.
I want to smell crushed fruits in the worst way. It sounds like a very me fragrance. Yes.
First it was crushed balls, now it's crushed fruits.
Yeah, right. Oh, I'd much rather have the fruit.
I saw in an interview that Alexa Chung wears Rock River Melody.
Hey.
And ever since then, I was like, well, now I need to smell that.
Yes.
She's also one of those people that I'm like, yes, obviously you have a job. I know what you do. You're on TV, like whatever, but it's very cool for reasons unknown.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, I think it's because she's not constantly. No, I just think she's cool because she's funny and on TV, but whatever.
That's all you need.
She has impeccable taste.
She does.
Yeah. It's in that the big Venn, the multi-Venn diagram of like the Sofia Coppola aesthetic.
Yes, universe. Exactly. The Virgin Suicides aesthetic.
Yeah. Anyway, check out Régime de Flore if you are not familiar with the brand. Just order direct.
Yeah.
It's the best way to help out a small business. Mm-hmm. You can find us at our website, smellyoulater.live, and on Instagram at smellyoulater.mp3. I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck.
And until next time, we will
smell you later.